Okay, let's bring this meeting to order. April 3rd, 2012, Newburyport Conservation Commission. For those who don't know, this meeting's being recorded. First item on the agenda are the meeting minutes from March 20th, I believe.
Yeah, 20th.
Any corrections?
Under the Milliken way, I think it's Milliken rather than Mulligan.
Mulliken, yeah. Mulliken. It's a K-E-N. M-U-L-L-I-K-E-N, I think.
Yeah, Mulliken.
Mulliken.
Mulliken, okay. And the other thing was on the 238 Northern Boulevard, maybe I don't remember this accurately, but I thought that they represented that only one sonotube was going to be moved.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And if that's the case, I think our the discussion should make it clear that only that's
mm-hmm.
the case.
Right, for existing sonotube instead of sonotubes to be moved. Yeah. For one of the existing.
Did you talk to the DEP about sonotubes?
I didn't. I haven't had a chance to do that, sorry.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. All right. Next item on the agenda is the citywide wetlands ordinance update and discussion.
Okay. So, as you know, the ordinance was supposed to come out of committee at the last city council meeting a week ago Tuesday, but it didn't because not enough of the committee members were there, so they kept it in committee. By the way, I'd like to recognize Councillor Katie Ives, who's here tonight. And so they anticipate it. Katie, would you want to just briefly mention what you think the schedule is for this?
Sure. I think that depending on Councillor O'Connell's availability, that's the key question. I would assume that we would be prepared to vote on at the next city council meeting if the conservation committee was comfortable with the current language or any necessary changes. It's just that once there are some language changes, we need to meet as a committee once again. So if there are any language changes, then we'd ideally like to meet before the next council meeting so that we can vote on it at the next council meeting.
Okay. So since that time, some questions have been brought up about some of the language in the ordinance, particularly with regard to the vernal pools and regulation of all vernal pools, whether they're certified or not. So I'd like to discuss that in addition to some other points that have been brought up since last week regarding some of the language in the ordinance. So I don't know how you guys want to start.
If you want to bring up the questions that were...
Okay. So number one, and I want to talk just about the ordinance and not the regulations because there are lots of things we can do to change the regulations later. But number one is a question of the applicability of the ordinance once it's passed. Would it apply to projects that already have received a determination or an order of conditions, or would those be grandfathered? So in other words, let's say a project had a negative determination and the wetland boundaries were outlined and they had a project that's ready to go forward, but they've not yet started that project. They have other permits and other things that they've been working on, and now we adopt this ordinance, and let's say there's work that would be within 25 feet of the wetland boundary. How does this apply? Do we grandfather that?
I would think so.
Well, then in that case, we need language.
Okay.
So we would need to say something like, this ordinance shall not apply to any project for which an RDA, NOI, NRAD, or other permit under the WPA has been issued and is valid at the time of adoption. So we just drafted some of that today.
There is a related issue, though, about sometimes we've had to extend permits that have expired.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that while the permit that's in place should be grandfathered, I'm not so sure about something that, or if somebody comes back in 2 years and wants to get it extended for another 2 years or something like that. Typically, NOIs, I think.
So in that case, we would say they can't move forward with their project?
Not. Well, I would think that they'd have to...
Yeah, I don't know about that, though, because under... Let's say they got this permit 3 years ago and now it's expiring. Well, 3 years ago, they were under the impression that if they didn't get their work completed within 3 years, they could get an extension. Mm-hmm. And now we've adopted this ordinance, and we might just put an X right through their project, and that's something that they wouldn't have anticipated or had any ability to anticipate.
I don't know that's
really right.
No, I don't think so. If somebody comes in for an extension and we decide not to extend it, it's for various, serious changes, and usually they have not even begun the project.
Mm-hmm.
But if...
Yeah. How do you know the impact wouldn't be serious, though? That's just...
Well, bad. No, I mean, it's something drastic has changed. The wetlands have greatly changed.
Well, it's we have different jurisdictional boundaries.
So the question is what we'd be extending, really. We're extending their permit under the State Wetlands Protection Act. So there is nothing to extend under our ordinance at that point. So the question is then, do we make our ordinance apply to... But it's not a new project. It's already permitted.
Yeah, and it's already done. And say they are working within 25 feet because they have to without following the project completely.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't strike me as fair.
Well, I'd approach it differently. I think you need to distinguish the fall between something that's underway and something that they still haven't started.
That's why I said that there are those two cases. And if you're saying,
I feel more sympathetic if something's half built or something like that, but if they never started it at all.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I don't know why we wouldn't want to apply them. Require them to be permitted under the local ordinance.
Then how do we make applicants aware of that? I think there may be people who would start their project or would have started their project if they had known that if they couldn't extend it, they would be out of luck.
Well, I think we have ways of publicizing it.
Yeah.
We could put it in the order of conditions. If you haven't started this.
Well, moving forward. Yeah, moving forward is a different story because it would fall under the
law. If you've already permitted, even if they haven't started, I don't think it's fair.
Yeah.
Anything that's permitted would be extended without regard to the local ordinance? But we grant a permit automatically under the local ordinance?
Historically, how many extensions have been granted? Is this something,
not many.
If some of these projects go on for 10 years, extension after extension without...
Oh, no.
Being
no.
Many, but a handful have gotten multiple extensions.
Yeah. And some of them were entitled to the automatic extension under the state law.
Yeah, the recent state law.
I'd be willing to give them one extension. I wouldn't go into multiple extensions.
Right.
One
extension shall be allowed for a project previously permitted, something like that.
Yeah, but I think in terms of language, it's not an extension because we've never permitted under the ordinance.
Right.
So
one extension shall be allowed under previously permitted projects under the Wetlands Protection Act without applicability of the new.
We need to put in on or extending it. 1 year, 2 years, generally extend for 2 years.
It's 3 years.
It's often 3. Depends what they ask for. I would say 3 if you're consistent with the PDP.
What does everyone else think?
Are we just talking about orders of conditions, or are we talking about determinations as well?
Well, because
I guess determination is determination. That's the end of it.
Yeah.
So it's really just orders of condition.
Or end grounds.
But I don't mean to quibble about it, but I just wonder whether extension is the right word for what we're doing under the ordinance in the church. They never were permitted under the ordinance at all, so we're not extending it.
We're not extending it under our ordinance, but we're extending their Wetlands Protection Act permit without applying our ordinance. Which I think is legitimate. I think it seems to me like a perfectly reasonable.
So it would be like a waiver or something like that.
Just like not bringing our new ordinance into the equation for something that's been already permitted.
Yeah, I guess the language might be the local ordinance would not apply to the first extension under the Wetlands Protection Act.
Okay.
Tom, you have a comment?
I was just going to say, I think one thing just to know, my background isn't just as a consultant, but I also professionally staff in Amesbury, Concord, Mass., Westport, and I wrote or helped write the bylaw and the regulations for Concord, in addition to having been a regulation writer for the state. In terms of applying it to existing orders of conditions, it's fairly common sort of precedent in this area when you adopt a new bylaw that if something's already permitted, it just doesn't apply to that. And if you choose to extend it, you kind of continue that exemption. I would encourage you just to basically recognize that if something's got a valid permit when this ordinance is adopted, that it can get built whenever it legally can get built. If you choose to extend it 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, or whatever, because I think of projects like the Traffic Circle, Theodore, that we permitted. In my view, that's a fantastic development that should go forward when the funding and everything is right for that. But right after that was permitted, the economy sank. They got a performer for that business, and they're trying to get funding and line up tenants, line up funding to fund the project. And then they're likely to come in for an extension when the state extension expires. And they may need more time than one extension to get the finances lined up for that. And all of a sudden, in the middle of all the extensions, you change the cost of doing the project. If you think about that area, it's an old area. It's been stripped of all its topsoil. It's got areas that, under the new ordinance, might include some isolated wetlands. It would be jurisdictional, but they're really caused by kids running at four-wheelers all over the place. And site was shaped by sort of human impacts and stuff. So I guess my suggestion to you would be just to recognize sort of that there are regulatory requirements under the Wetland Protection Act. There's something you have to meet in order to for you guys to grant an extension. And I'd put to you that if you find a project that comes in and you just kind of shake your head and say the same thing needs to come down to the ordinance, you just don't need the extension. And then it's not
and we still we do have the option.
Like that's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay,
there's language in the ordinance that says we can provide a waiver if necessary, or
yeah, but that would then go through. I mean, it's not cheap or easy to even apply for a permit. You know, so I think you're talking about paying somebody to come in to represent the meetings, putting together the new file, addressing you've got an awful lot more performance standards and values, and then the variance request would have to be well justified and well thought out. So again,
the question really is, Tom, whether their title is a matter of right to multiple. Whether they're entitled as a matter of right to multiple extensions without applicability to local ordinance. And that's not a permitting issue. It's a determination of the commission to whether or not we want to grant more than one extension without it applying. You don't necessarily have to require that they do a full permit application.
Right, but I guess what I would put to you is that I think a policy decision that makes sense is to basically use language similar to what Julia just read, which is essentially if someone's got a valid approval at the time of adoption of the ordinance, that carries through until the project's done or the permit expires. And I think given that, you have an opportunity when somebody comes in even for the first extension to do one of three things. One is to just grant the extension quote, and the approval goes on. The other is to deny it because the project in your view was maybe not a great one, but one that you had to approve at the time because of the standards you had. Or three, to look and say, you know something, if we applied the bylaw, we would have gotten this. Or, I mean, the ordinance. We would have gotten this. But if you're willing to make a slight project change, we'd be more to extend it. And kind of doing a little bit of negotiating. And there may be projects for which multiple extensions without an application of the ordinance makes sense. And then there may be others that you don't want to extend even once. And I think by just saying...
I think we're saying the same thing. Where I find myself coming out on this is that the applicant would be entitled as a matter of right to one extension without applicability of the local ordinance. Here.
Well, I don't think it's of right. But if it's a date, they can request an extension of an existing project based solely on the Development Protection Act.
But if
and we don't have to grant that. We never have.
Right, but if we grant the first extension, we don't apply the local ordinance.
Right, that's what I said. That is for a project that's already been done.
Right.
And they apply for the extension solely under the WPA.
So what about periodic extensions after that? You're going to let it go all the way to...
Well, it appears...
It's up to us each time.
Right.
I mean, even on the first time, we can say no extensions. Yeah, that's our prerogative.
But aren't we changing... But if we do that solely because we'd like the local ordinance to apply, we would otherwise grant the extension. I mean, nothing has really changed. We otherwise grant a WPA extension, but now we want to apply the local ordinance. Isn't that changing the rules?
It is, and I would be very annoyed if we did that. Unless there was a real good reason to. But, you know, right now if somebody walked in and wanted an extension, we could just say no.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not now because of the state law, but if that goes
through.
There are some other items on the same topic that we need to discuss, some other parts of the ordinance that I'd like to bring up in addition to this one. So thinking maybe we should save the rest of this until after we take care of our other business items tonight.
How many more items are there?
Well, there are some questions I have about exemptions and variances and then the vernal pool habitat mainly. So, you know, a few other things that I think we just want to quickly iron out if we can do it quickly. If not, maybe we save it for another time. But I think we could probably move on, take care of our other faster items.
What, like the...
like our hearing.
You want to take care of that?
And we've got some other folks coming for enforcement. It's up to you, Joe. I'm just suggesting.
I want to go on this for at least another 8 minutes, so
okay.
We're
okay.
We start at 7 when we're supposed to start.
Yeah.
So why don't we keep going on this, and then we'll... I don't want to start anything too early.
Actually,
This is a
little different. It's the project that I was involved with, that it was the Brown Street project. It was the OSRD. There's an OSRD special permit. There was an RDA issue that determined that it was an isolated land subject to flooding. So with that RDA, it said, okay, ILSF has a buffer area. The project was designed around the fact that there was no buffer area. So now if that ends up being an isolated wetland with 25-foot disturbed and everything that goes along with it, with basically the roads put in, the drainage is put in, but no building permits have been pulled. So the question is, when he comes in for a building permit, and they say, okay, that could be isolated wetland, is he now jurisdictional?
Well, like we talked before, the project's been started.
Yes.
So the stuff's already been...
Yeah, because to be honest, if there was a 25-foot no disturb, we would have probably gone in that direction and either made larger lots or moved the project in a different direction. So, okay.
Yeah.
So that would apply. Okay.
I would think so. But,
all right. So what we need to do is just put that in writing and make sure that gets in here, so we don't bump into problems. Sounds like it could easily come up. All right, so moving on from that, exemptions and exceptions. Should there be an exception for maintenance of stormwater control BMPs or other structures? Right now, there's no exemption for that in this. So let's say there's a detention basin or a drainage swale, and it's within 25 feet of another wetland, or it's within 100 feet of another, in any of those cases, mowing of that, maintaining of that, doing anything to the vegetation in there or drainage in there, we would have to come for a permit. And I don't know that that's something we want to have happen. We're sort of trying really hard to get away from having that happen. So we might want to add an exemption.
I think that one's going to require a little thought as to whether and how we do that, what the language should look
right.
like.
Right.
You know, there is that exemption under the Wetlands Protection Act for maintaining certain utility structures
right.
and so on.
Well,
that
I guess
be a model for
yeah.
this if we want to go this way.
Well, they go into a lot of detail about that exemption
right.
in the Wetlands Protection and the regulations right now. And I'm wondering actually why we didn't adopt more of the Wetlands Protection Act exemptions. They all seem to make a lot of sense. We have some of them, but we don't have all of them. And I'm just wondering
maybe
why.
Maybe we decided it would be better in the regs.
Yeah.
The ordinance, I don't know. Or in the labor.
So another one would be, so stormwater was one that I started thinking about, and the other one would have been maintenance of existing lawns, gardens, homes within 100 feet. Right now, we would have to get a notice of intent if someone wanted to replace anything on the exterior, do any repairs to the exterior of their house, or mow their lawn. Honestly, I think we need to call that out as an exemption. It actually is exempted. Some of that, with regard to structures and paved areas, is exempted from the 25-foot no disturb regulations or requirements, but not from the rest of it. So that seems like, ouch, we don't want that.
So the exemption would just be for maintenance of current conditions?
Maintenance of existing homes, single-family homes, lawns, gardens, fences, all existing.
Right. So if they wanted to put in a new garden?
If they wanted to put in a new garden or even plant something new in their garden. Right now, we don't even let them plant anything.
Right.
So, or fence. If the fence is in disrepair and they want to patch a section of their fence, they're going to have to come for a notice of intent. It doesn't seem... So I think we can work out some language, and I can send it around, but...
I actually brought with me the regulations we wrote for the bylaw language we wrote for town and Concord. And a little bit of it might be a little more expansive than what you want if you're not going to adopt Wetland Protection Act exemptions wholesale. But, for example, some of the things that they exempted were maintaining or repairing existing buildings and structures provided the footprint remains the same, there's no additional alteration of the resource area, there's no heavy equipment stockpiling, et cetera, within 50 feet. You also need to, the exemptions also only apply, by the way, if no trees greater than 6 inches are cut and erosion controls are installed if required by the conservation agent. Constructing, maintaining, repairing unpaved walkways. Maintaining and repairing existing stone walls. Maintaining and constructing new fencing provides greater than 50 feet from the wetland edge or mean high water. And the bottom of the fence is 6 inches off the ground, so it doesn't obstruct the movement of wildlife. Stacking cordwood. I mean, think about it. Do you want to require permits for stacking cordwood? Conversion of lawns to decks, sheds, patios, and pools. My suggestion would be you get rid of the pools part of that, but I think the same conversion of lawns, same as in the Wetland Protection Act. And if, you know, people are just doing accurate stuff without having to fill, it's fairly low impact. You can set it in a distance away from the reply. Activities such as monitoring wells, exploratory boring, soil sampling, and surveying that are temporary have negligible impacts, as determined by the commission and necessary for planning and design purposes. So, for example, when I go out to delineate a wetland, I have to dig a soil pit. It's not exempt under the reg, so I'm going to have to come in and do an RDA every time I'm going to do a soil transect. You really don't have any dependence. Fine.
No.
I mean, from an economic standpoint,
right,
for my family.
Planning and design.
Talks,
yeah.
You know, almost goes to the question of the definition of what an alteration is. In essence, just saying stacking cordwood isn't an alteration of the resource area.
Well, it destroys vegetation if it's overly vegetated. Mm-hmm. Under your definition of alteration, I believe all these things are at risk of somebody acquiring a permit. Now, am I particularly worried with this particular commission makeup and the current agent about these issues? Not overly, but I think you've got to design this for anybody who could be sitting here in the future, any potential agent you may have, and just have this sort of well spelled out. The other thing I would suggest that's also in the Concord regulations is that you adopt something called an administrative approval, which would be for these minor, smaller things that maybe aren't exempted. And what that would allow is your agent to authorize it by letter. And then the way they do it in Concord is all the letters are written out but not issued until after the next meeting. And all the projects are listed on the agenda for which a letter of approval will be issued. And that's just an opportunity for everybody to know what's going on and for you guys to ask questions before the letter is issued. But what I looked at...
We actually had a fairly extensive discussion over the two-year period we were working on. About whether permits and how that might work.
Right.
Ultimately decided we did not get into it at the time.
Well, that's fine.
I think we all recognize there are some advantages to it, and maybe we should revisit it.
Well, I think, you know, at the time, and I was sort of here discussing with you when you guys first began this process, then I sort of fell out of the process. But I think when I read through the ordinance, there's a lot of issues that, to me, are going to be difficult to administer for you guys and for your staff. And you don't have staff with the kind of hours you had when you first started the process. So I think it's important to kind of recognize that you've got fewer hours and try to make it as easy to administer.
Tom, how much of this that you're talking about is in the, is it all in the bylaw in Concord, or is some of it in the regs?
Some of it's in the regs, some of it's in the bylaw. I mean, and this isn't all Concord stuff. I made comments specific to your ordinance, and some, I think, you know, Julia's got most of it. I'm trying to rush because I've got to pick up my dog in Concord, actually, at 8:30. But there's some things about, like another issue I'll raise is I think you need a little bit of adjusting on your definition of vernal pool habitat to exclude lawns from it. You excluded the vernal pool itself if it's in the lawn. But you didn't exclude the habitat from that. So that means if there's a vernal pool 50 feet out in the wetland, you know, out of the wildwood, then you've just basically said that 200 feet from that is all vernal pool habitat, even if that's somebody's living room.
You mean existing lawn?
lots, not
extending lots. The other general comment, I don't have specific language to encourage you to adopt, would be when you have an existing lot, it goes right to the edge of wetland. You don't really have a way in here that is a clear path. I think the variance is probably the closest thing you got to it. But to try to get from grandfathered to what you want through mitigation and compromise when you don't have an existing situation that would be compliant. Overall, I mean, I think you guys have done an excellent ordinance laid out. There's just some minor stuff I would do to try to make administration easier. The other thing on the RDA, a butter notification, I'll either do it or don't make it so it's discretionary, because then what's going to happen is I come in and get an RDA for somebody to do a project, they cut a few trees, and that's when the neighbor finds out they're doing the project and comes in and is screaming at everybody in town in City Hall because they didn't get notified. And here the regulation says you guys couldn't make them notified. And you're just creating a sort of a nightmare situation. I would either just do it or don't. And there's a few other things. I don't want to sort of go through everything in detail, but I would definitely be willing to work with you guys to iron some language out if you want that. I want to offer my help to try to get you some of your
I would think a good amount of these things, including the exceptions and exemptions, could go in the regulations. I don't know how much the council wants to blow it up and start all over again. And that which we can do in the regulations, I think we should do it. Anybody else thinks?
Well, I get what you're saying, and I think there's a lot more we can do in the regulations to tweak some things and make it more clear. But if there's already a section exemptions in the ordinance, then I think we need to fix that where it is rather than have some exemptions there and some exemptions in the regs, you know? Otherwise, it's going to be pretty misleading for folks.
Why would it be misleading if they're going to have to read the regulations in order to address their project?
Yeah, I'm just not sure that we can. If we have a certain number of exemptions in the regs and it says other than that, there are no more exemptions, and that's in the ordinance, and then we go to the regs and there's more exemptions. I think we really need to be in one place, either in the regs or in the ordinance. That's just, if I was looking, I don't know how you can actually put something in the regs if it's not already provided for in the ordinance.
Well, you simply say in the ordinance that activities can be exempted by the regulation.
Well, okay.
If
so
you want to. Maybe that's not a good policy idea, but we certainly can do it.
Additional exemptions may be found in the regulation.
I think something that's a kind of a pervasive issue, like maybe lawns, existing lawns, or the kinds of things you were describing a minute ago, Tom, that probably should be in the ordinance. Going to happen. Mm-hmm. It could happen pretty frequently.
Mm-hmm.
But for some relatively minor obscure things, I'm not so sure we need to.
Right.
Part of the goal here was not to have a 100-page ordinance.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, could we say something like add those few things to these exemptions and then say the commission may adopt additional exemptions within the regulations? As provided by Section X?
I think we recognized or tried to recognize that it was a bit of a process. The ordinance hopefully would get adopted and starting regulations, but then over time as we work with it, we'd recognize that things had to be tweaked because there might be problems. And that's why I think we wanted to try to do as much of that in the regs as we could so that we didn't have to go back to the council to modify the ordinance every time.
That was the main
idea.
That
new issue that
And especially something like this, we may find that there are 12 exemptions that we'd want to have all the time, and we didn't have them in the ordinance, so what do we have to do? Go back to the council and have them added.
Yeah. So, as long as we can do it in the ordinance.
Add a sentence to the ordinance that says that the commission may adopt the additional exemptions within the regulations.
But I'm sympathetic to Tom's point that if it's a broad issue that's going to come up a lot, then maybe it needs to be up front in the ordinance, so people ought to be able to see it right away. know, that's fine, but there's a lot of stuff that's pretty minor, and, you know.
Let me just give you guys this copy. It's pretty bad print, but I think I can probably email this to you and plug it in Word. This is the Concord bylaw. It's circled the three sections of exemptions that I can look at.
I might actually have a copy of that. It's probably on the MACC website.
Should be, but it was recently adopted, so I'm not sure if they
have
a copy of it there yet.
All right, this looks...
But it's probably a horrible scanned copy.
No, I can read it.
Yeah,
what's online?
I could get you the word from one of the...
That'd be great. Yeah, that would be great.
All right, well, let's pause this here.
Okay.
And... head into the regular meeting, try and get the rest out of the way. Yes, ma'am.
Matt, I just briefly ask that whatever the final voted on version we had in committee, could the recommended changes of language be in a different color and then we can see what the new...
Absolutely.
Okay,
definitely. Okay.
Okay, do I have a motion?
Okay.
All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Okay, first item is the City of Newburyport Beach Management Plan. Amendment of the Order of Conditions.
Okay. So I guess I'll speak for Andy, who is sick today. He wasn't in today, so couldn't come tonight. But this is the request for the amendment coming from the planning office for the beach management plan, and it is really the exact language that we all had agreed upon in those few meetings that we discussed it. It provides for us to be notified of the of any sand that's to come in. We need to have the particle distribution size report, the sand material specifications is what it has to meet. We need 48 hours of notice. We are to receive the sieve analysis and associated representative sample of sediment before sand is delivered to the site, and a plan describing the means and methods of delivering and placement of the sand. So all of that, including a map showing the intended stockpile area, delivery route, photos of the intended route, and a plan for restoration of the route to existing conditions. So... I think it's all in there.
I was just curious, a sort of DCR was added in here.
It could potentially be DCR that steps forward and says we want to put the sand down. You know, it is there. They do have ownership of that, a lot of the areas of the beach. So I think we added that just to cover all bases.
Somebody talked about not allowing this to happen 50-50.
I don't think we said that we wouldn't allow it to happen at 55th Street. But you're right, I think we were hoping that we would be encouraging it at 53rd and 57th because it's easier in those locations, it's less of a distance. But, you know, if for some reason those areas are blocked or inappropriate given the schedule or whatever, then we may want to allow ourselves to permit it at 55th Street.
Well, one of the issues with 55th Street was if enough sand was lost where the ramp couldn't be used to be able to build up the sand there so the ramp can be safely deployed.
I don't think we said you couldn't nourish 55th Street, just
access.
The access would not be from 55th Street because A, the ramp is there and how steep it is there.
I don't know if we want to cut ourselves off from allowing it. I think you're right, it probably doesn't make the most sense to bring the sand to that location rather than the other two locations. But if for some reason the other two locations don't work or...
How about building that in and say... 55th Street won't be used unless it's impracticable to do it in any other way.
What do you guys think?
I guess 55th Street, the end of that is so blocked by the ramp that's there now, the walkway that's there now. They're not going to, they can't really drive anything out there. I don't know if they would put a conveyor system or something if they had to. I just don't know how they would do it. I don't know if it's going to be that huge of an issue. But.
Stay the way it is. Cross that dune.
Yeah, I don't have a huge issue with it. But.
Well, also, it's the, what it's how it reads here is not that we are explicitly, you know, providing for the beach, the sand to be placed at 55th Street, but we're saying sediment for beach nourishment and provision for public access at 53rd, 55th, and 57th Streets. So it really does need to be called out because that is one of the locations where sand would be placed. It may not be delivered there, and the delivery is you know, covered in the next paragraph or the paragraph after that. So.
Yeah, I think we have enough authority to just basically say no, you can't stop
right
out there or whatever. We have to approve the whole plan anyway. So.
Yeah, if we get a plan and there's no reason why they can't drop it at 53rd, but they said they're going to drop it at 55th, then we'll just say bring it to 53rd.
Anything else? All in favor? Aye. Opposed?
All right. This time I'm actually going to pass around the signature sheet.
Oh, right here.
Yeah. We just see one of them. You want to start with yours? You want to start yours?
Sure. Okay, do we have a motion?
Motion to close the public hearings.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. I am recusing myself from the first enforcement issue.
Okay, Chip.
Sure, I sent an email late today.
Yeah, just got it.
All the members have them, or should I?
I printed it for all and copied it for all the members, but thanks. Thanks for bringing those.
I'm sorry, I just received that today from Mary. So my name is Chip Nyland. I'm here representing the Ventures LLC with respect to the erosion issues at Proline Landfill. I was here in February and gave you a general idea of the plan that's going to take place in the spring. I then memorialized that with a fairly general plan that was supposed to reflect that in March, and then Julia asked me to come tonight to be a little bit more specific about what we were going to do out there. So I can talk about that. I have what I've submitted to you. We have three issues. First is, as we talked about before, is to stabilize that southwest corner towards those towards that objective. We've been going out there on a weekly basis. It's been slippery, but finally this week we've been able to add loam and seed and to start stabilizing that area because we want to stabilize that first. That's the most important. And so now it's been dry enough. Even though the weather's been good, we still it's been pretty wet up there. So that started. That will continue. And we're hoping by this week we'll have those washouts patched. Then what we do is we hydroseed and we add that Flex Terra, which is a real heavy hydroseed. Intent there is obviously to stabilize that. So we're that started when I was in front of you in February. I told you we were going to do that in the spring. We didn't know when it was going to be, and that has just started. So then the second question we have is, or what do we do in the interim? And Mary Grimmer has provided a couple of recommendations. We have some tiered, for the, I know that Steve's been out there, for those of you who've been out there, we have sort of tiered hay bales to catch the sediment that's coming on that southwest corner. And Mary made a recommendation about extending one a little bit further to catch more of the sediment. And so that we're going to make that adjustment in the next day or so. And then just to maintain them, she took some pictures, and they seem to be holding up well. I've been out there a couple of times, and again, since they were installed earlier this calendar year, I think they're holding up pretty well. But again, you have to maintain them. Then the next step, once we have the area stabilized, is we've identified that sediment down in the lower area in the wetland. And what Mary has stated that she'll do here is she's going to stake that out. The specific area, then she'll contact Julia and the commission so that you can go out and take a look. And ultimately, we'll remove that once the area is stable so we don't have to do it more than once. And she's recommended a New England seed mix to apply after that material has been removed. I thought we might be able to do some of that removal with a small bobcat. She's suggesting we do it by shovel. I've been out there, I didn't think it would matter one way or the other, but she's recommended for that material to be removed by shovel. So, again, we think that we're aiming to cap and to close this spring and summer, so everything is going to be done in concert with that. The replication restoration efforts in connection with the berm are also going to be taking place over the next month or so. The last question, we can talk about the erosion or however you'd like to go, but the last question was, when I was here in February, Steve asked about the water coming out of that pipe, and all I can, because it's not coming from the basin, that's clear, and I've looked at that, and all I can deduce is, and I talked to the engineers, it's got to be infiltration. It's coming, obviously, from the landfill. The one thing I can say is that we've predicted that as the landfill's been closed, it dries up, and we're seeing great reductions in the significant reductions in the levels of gas that are being generated, and we see the same thing with the water. So there'll be some water that will trickle out where we'll test that if necessary. There's nothing that's scaring us at this point in time about what that is, but that's what it appears to be. It's got to be from the from the joints. That's all that we can figure out. So we did look at that. So I think that what I would say to you is that we will continue to update you. Mary is going to be the project engineer, if you recall, on the restoration and replication. So she's going to be out there anyway, and she'll be helping direct us to make sure that area is stabilized and that material will be removed in the lower corner. I think that will probably be at least a month, because I think, as I said, we don't want to do it twice. And it's not good for that wetland, and it's not good for any of us. So once she gives us the go-ahead, the area is stabilized, then we'll be removing that material. She quantified it at about 1,000 square feet is what she said, which I think is consistent with what I saw down there.
What about the other areas of erosion on the backside, on the slopes, and also where it had gone into the wetlands? I don't see that addressed in.
Asked her to concentrate on the southwest, but yeah, in each of those instances, we have the same issue, which is the water's coming from the top. So the first and most important is the southwest. We're going to move around I should have included all of that, but that obviously we're not going to ignore the others. But since there seems to be far more sediment down in the southwest corner than in some of the other areas. But yes, we would be doing the same thing. Hugo started the southwest. He'll move around, heading off to that, to the west and the north, heading away from Crow Lane. That's the south side appears to be pretty good. It's just heading over to that.
It would be a lot more difficult to remove the sediment that's in those other wetland areas by hand or machine.
Yeah, you know what we did? Well, I know, because if you recall, at when we changed the berm so that we weren't going into the wetland, we got rid of that roadway, so it's you know, you pretty much have that slope there, so you're right. I think the only way you can come in is from the bottom. That's the only way to get. I don't see us coming in from the top, so that the large material we can get out we'll take out of it.
So you don't have a plan yet for how you're going to do that?
I didn't ask her to look at that. I asked her to look at the southwest. So that's something that we will, that we're going to have to do. We certainly, in terms of having a plan, we're going to, for the stabilization piece, that's included. We're going to do the whole landfill. But for that removal, I didn't ask specifically for the task that we need to do in that other portion. I'll take a look.
At some point, we'll need to see the plan for that.
Yes, and I focused on the south. That's why I didn't ask her. So it's not a question of her not doing it. I didn't ask her.
Next meeting is the 17th.
So, did you vote? That's 17th.
It's the 17th, yeah.
And you said you, as far as the that pipe, the farm, you said you tested it.
I think that's just generally if it's an odor or something that looks different than that looks like something that could have contaminants. If there's an odor that would suggest something, if it's the normal iron, we talked about that orangey, which is a background, that's not something that really disturbs us. But if there was something else, then that would be appropriate. So that would be up to the engineer to make that call. I talked to my patrimony about that.
Well, could we ask them to do that? Just so that we can put that to rest?
Yeah, I mean, ask them, what would you look for? Metals, or what would you look for? What kind of testing? I mean, there's a different range. Yeah. I could talk to him and ask, but I would imagine it's usually the metals is what you're interested in seeing, what's out there. It's not fecal or anything else, bacteria, okay.
Well, it could be there was some sludge down there at one point.
That's what we alleged, yes, in the lawsuits, yeah. We haven't seen that, though. It has been, if you recall, it has been tested as part of the CSA, was a comprehensive site assessment that we had to do with the landfill, and we did test down in that area, and there weren't metals in that, because that was one of the findings.
I think it's a good idea to get it tested now, given that this is when we're first starting to see this drainage out of the pipe. We'll get an understanding of what the current condition of that water is. If somehow it changes later, we'll know that it's changed. So
you establish a baseline?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you think just the metals is...
Yeah, I'm not an expert on that. What do you think, Jim? What would you want to say?
Prior to 13, PP13 metals, 8270, which is semi volatiles. You'll do the whole scan, 8260s, and TPH is probably fine. We don't need any pH. TPH is TPH, 8100. Stuff.
Yeah, well, stand if you're dealing with hazardous waste. I mean, this is a landfill with
one of the things.
Well, there's a municipal landfill that's been closed for 25
years. The only thing that we has been added recently is, well, that's Charlie George wasn't, we're no Charlie George. And we, there's been testing, you recall.
But the price of those, the cost of those additional analyses is not that much. I think it's put everyone's mind.
Yeah, let's just cross them off the list.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna bring those to my engineer's attention. I don't think that there'll be an issue. If there is, I'll let you know.
It'll be talking, a couple hundred dollars, not tens of thousands.
I know that. I just want to assure you, in terms of putting my address, that though that area was tested before it was purchased, because my client didn't want to purchase it if he had those issues. And it's been tested throughout the CSA. So there's never been a suggestion by any. We've had lots of things that have been said about this landfill, but not in terms of.
Oh, but I agree. I mean, the coloration of the machine is most likely than that. It's particularly high. But
I think so. Okay.
Thanks.
Good. Thank you very much.
Okay. Next item is 1 Shandell Drive. Forceful order.
Is this your home here? This house here? Is this?
So my actual home is right here. So these are two different lots. So this is a whole map, and then this is the property in question. And these are the wetlands. So there are some trees in the what I understand is the buffer. So
you own this lot and?
And this all the way up to the street.
Yeah, who's your stuff?
Including that foundation.
So where are we talking?
So this is 5 Shandell. This is 1 Shandell. He owns both of these lots.
Okay.
This is the wet one.
This house is identified as 31-19.
Right. That one, okay.
This is an old property, I think, from Google Maps. It's not the updated version of my house.
Okay.
So I'm 5 Shandell, which is this lot. This is
Ocean. Here, look at that.
And then 1 Shandell.
That's the foundation.
Yep, that's the foundation that I acquired this land late last year.
Right.
Okay.
I used the word cut, or approximately where this kind of pink lines going across the lot.
Yep.
It says 31-20-20.
Yeah, that line looks like a line. That's where those granite bollards are, those granite posts.
Oh, that's where the granite posts are. So
I believe those are the granite posts.
It's a little before that. So what happens is, I'll show you.
Although some trees were cut behind it. Trees were cut both behind it and in front of it.
Yeah, so right here there's a drop-off where my understanding from talking to Rosa is where
the wetland begins.
Starts.
Yes.
And then right in front of it there were a handful of trees that were cut. And then there was one, you see this tree right here, that's technically a buffer zone that's in this picture. That was an evergreen or a spruce tree, I guess. I didn't realize that that was in the buffer zone, but that technically is in the buffer zone as well when we took that down. And that's what alerted us to the fact that there was an issue. Or me.
So what kind of time frame are we talking with regards to you doing something with that wetland?
As far as a plan on restoration, so I'm engaged with DeRosa now and trying to devise that and get it in front of the folks. So I would expect to do it by the end of the summer, at the very least, as soon as my landscapers and the approval process can come through. Then we can put together a reasonable plan from cost benefit perspective.
Yeah, I tend to think that, you know, the report from DeRosa makes a statement that there was no habitat value, or not habitat, there was no value lost to the wetland by cutting of the trees. What he didn't mention was habitat value, which even if they were junk trees, if they were invasive trees, they were still providing a diversity of habitat in that wetland area. So by taking them down and leaving no trees whatsoever, it did alter the functional value of that wetland area. So I think that by proposing to do a little bit of restoration work in that area, removing some of those other invasive species maybe, the Phragmites, the Japanese knotweed, some of the others, you would be improving that. You may not be adding the trees, but you'd be still improving the habitat value of the wetland by removing those invasives. So I think that to me represents a balance there. And a decent mitigation. I don't know what the commissioners feel, but that was my take on it when I read the report.
I'm committed to doing that.
Okay, well, the reason why I asked about your time frame is, you know, we have an enforcement order in effect right now, and I think it's kind of up to us whether we hold off on it, doing what we want to do, to wait for your proposal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any experience in putting I have experience putting landscape proposals together, but these seem a little more intense from the little experience I've had over the last couple of weeks. So, I mean, I think it sounds like you guys meet every other week. So I think in 4 weeks, we should be able to have a plan in front of why this is stacked. I don't know that I defer to it. If we run into complications, I can give you a holler and tell you it might be a couple of weeks further.
Yeah, I mean, we meet the first and third Tuesday of every month. So our next meeting is the 17th. Meeting after that would be the first Tuesday in May. And I would think that if you're working with DeRosa, they could put something together and you could get it to one of our meetings in May, possibly.
Yeah.
First or the second meeting in May. Yeah, and that would probably require a notice of intent or a request for determination of applicability in terms of just... And I think actually it would be an RDA to do the work, right? Because it's making improvements to a wetland area. What would you think? You may just want to consult with him about it, about what kind of filing. It's either a notice of intent, which is we're issuing a permit for you to do that work in the wetland area, or it would be a request for determination of applicability, which is somewhat less rigorous of an application process, but it still requires you to come to us and for us to approve the work.
Okay.
So you might want to just get the scope of work from him and what he's proposing, and then...
That would
be okay. Yeah. Yeah, just get a feel for what it is, because it may depend on what method you're going to use to get rid of the invasives.
If you're going in there with getting rid of all the Phragmites, that's a big project.
Yeah.
If you're going to do something around the periphery with some of the other species, that's different. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Will you be getting rid of the foundation as part of that?
To be determined. Yeah. I'm also listening to his advice on that foundation as well. Its relationship with the wetland and the eagle rights around the building.
I assume that the permit on that, where that foundation was, would be an offset, but that's expired by now.
Yeah, that was 1996.
Yeah.
Yeah, that original permit.
So, yeah. So, again, I didn't work with you people.
Yeah, we won't.
Yeah. I prefer not to lose the rights to have that hit over the wall.
Right.
But I'm committed. If I can guarantee those rights, which there's no guarantee in life, I understand. I made that up tomorrow. But I don't want to lose the rights to build some future game.
Mm-hmm. Well, you may have just overheard a little of our conversation about the wetlands ordinance that we have developed. And that is a little bit more stringent than the State Wetlands Protection Act in terms of what can and can't be done in a buffer zone and 25 feet. So just pay attention to that.
That's why I have to roast on this.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
So keep the enforcement order
in effect
until we see a plan.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll bring a plan forward for the next time.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Give me a call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, back to the ordinance. Shall we go through your
okay?
Issues?
So yeah, I mean, actually, I think Tom Hughes is good of him to come. He took a close look at it and has a lot of comments. Probably way more than what I came up with based on Steve Sawyer's original comments. But one of the other things is in the variances section, we say that there should be no waivers for Plum Island. We say, in order to maintain compliance with the terms of the administrative consent order issued by Mass DEP, in 2000, no waivers or variances may be granted from Section 3 of this ordinance, which is the Plum Island section. But yet, the Plum Island ordinance itself grants waivers. So, and variance has a variance and waiver section. So are we eliminating that by this language? Are we taking away a waiver that's currently available to folks for out there? I just wanted to...
That wasn't the intent.
Right, so how did I couldn't figure out how this language actually applies.
I don't recall.
Can we just take it out? Can we just delete that sentence? And that way all the waivers would still apply the way they currently apply.
No, I think it has to be synchronized. I think probably we shouldn't be issuing waivers on broader terms than the administrative consent order allows. I'm not sure. I mean, I haven't looked at... Have you looked
Maybe
at the waiver?
Maybe it just needs to say no waiver under this ordinance shall be granted for... I see what the goal
but
is.
This ordinance envelops the Plum Island
ordinance
in Section 3. So,
so then we
think we need to be a little careful that the waiver provisions are consistent in both so that we haven't...
So then why would we say no waivers or variances may be granted from Section 3?
I don't know.
I would say in the worst case under that variance section that we have one set of variance procedures and another set for the Plum Island Overlay District.
I just want to make sure that this doesn't negate the ones that
are
already
there. It would be
nice
if the waiver provisions could be the same.
Right, yeah, but
maybe they can be. I just haven't tried to.
Have you tried
to compare them?
I don't know. I would have assumed that that would remain and this would remain the way they currently are, except for then this sentence seems to.
Right.
I think the intent was that the performance standards for the Plum Island overlay would be the Section 3, and the administrative stuff would be the rest of the ordinance, and it would also apply to Plum Island. So I find this a little puzzling. That
I think it really depends on the wording of
perhaps
the two sets of variances, and perhaps they are identical.
I don't think they're identical, they're different.
It depends on the intent.
Maybe I just need to talk about this with our legal staff. I don't know if we need to take this to that level. But
I'm not sure we need to. I'm not sure we need to.
Compliance with the terms. Administrative consent order. No waivers or variances may be granted from Section 3 of this ordinance, which provides specific performance standards for the Plum Island Barrier Beach. I think what it's trying to do is say that just because we've got this new ordinance and Section 3 in here provides these performance standards, doesn't mean that you can get a variance now for performance standards that you couldn't get a variance for under the
right.
under the old
right.
Plum Island ordinance.
Yeah.
So we're not allowing any new level of variance waivers.
Right.
But I want to make sure we're not eliminating the ability to get the original
variance.
Right,
right. But you know what? It'd be great if we didn't have to have two separate variance protocols, one for the Plum Island overlay and the other for the rest of the city. But
maybe if we say something like we can say that and then add the existing section whatever of the Plum Island ordinance.
I think we need to look at what the variance, the Plum Island variance language is.
It's three items.
What we've got here.
It is. I can read them right here. It's three little paragraphs. Conservation, let's see. Okay. The Conservation Commission may grant a variance from these special requirements when it finds, after opportunity for public hearing, that, number one, there are no reasonable conditions or alternatives that would allow the project to proceed in compliance with the ordinance, and mitigation measures are proposed that will allow the project to be conditioned so as to contribute to the protection of the wetland resource areas located on the Barrier Beach, and page down again, and three, the variance is necessary to accommodate an overriding community public interest or to avoid a decision that so restricts the use of the property as to constitute an unconstitutional taking without compensation.
Very similar.
That sounds pretty similar.
Sounds
doesn't
really
it?
Similar.
Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe we could just strike
that sentence.
Strike that sentence. It just is what it is. All right.
Because we haven't really changed the Plum Island variance drill, I guess.
Okay.
Since we're, and I agree with it, that we strike that sentence. For the city council purposes, should we just include a note that this doesn't mean we're letting anything happen now, but that it's the standard variances will apply in our people to read this?
Yeah, fortunately, I'm taking notes. So
okay.
No, I understand the intent behind it, but I do agree with Julie that I think the reason why it was there was probably just to make clear that there's no exception to the original standards.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get around that.
Mm-hmm.
So I always thought.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
To us, changing any of the performance standards with respect to the Plum Island situation was a can of worms. We just simply did not want to do it.
Yeah. Okay. My next question is on 25-foot no disturb zone. And we said that, we're not allowing pruning. I guess my question is, is it possible for someone to, again, it goes back to the existing lawns and gardens kind of situation. If there is someone with an existing lawn in the 25-foot no disturb zone, can they continue to mow their lawn? Can they continue to plant their flowers if they have a garden against a fence, which is against the web? That kind of thing. Is that going to be allowed? It's not accepted in here. It's not accepted unless we put it in the other exceptions. So maybe they go together under an exception from in the main piece.
I would think so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to check on that.
The only question I have is where it goes in the ordinance. And maybe if it's going to be a fairly common issue that comes up, it ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will be fairly common.
It sounds like so.
We had an individual up on Quail Run who probably had 100 yards of fill, which was routine maintenance.
Well, you've got the creeping lawn problem, don't you? We've seen that many times.
You do, but existing lawn.
Yeah, it's creep.
Well,
if you were to honestly ask for everybody with a lawn within 25 feet of a wetland in the city of Newburyport to come in for a permit, we would
don't want that.
Yeah.
I don't want them also to
think
that 100 yards of fill.
No. No, well, that's different because that's not actually maintenance of an existing. But they shouldn't. I mean, there are some people who are going to build a house and think that they don't need a permit, you know. So we'll have to hope that most people, you know, can tell the difference.
I mean, I think mulching a flower bed's a little different from the 100 yards of fill issue, but, you know, the devil is always in the detail.
Yeah.
Well,
but that person's probably out there doing that right now.
Yeah.
You know?
The 100 yards of the mulching.
Yeah, with Jeff both, either.
I was kind of hoping that you wouldn't accept it because then I wouldn't have to mow my lawn.
All right,
I would have
your,
an excuse.
No,
we're getting rid of most of that, the rest of that too.
All right, then finally the vernal pool habitat thing. And I hadn't even thought of what Tom brought up, which was that the vernal pool habitat does not include, we say it shall not include, let's see, areas within existing lawns, et cetera, et cetera. But if it's outside of an existing lawn, if it's in the woods, the 200-foot no-disturb area could be in someone's lawn or in their front yard or in their backyard or on their driveway. So, or if the vernal pool is in someone's yard, let's say it's on their property, we're not acknowledging that that's a vernal pool, so therefore we won't even accept the 200-foot buffer if it's in the woods off of their property. So I think we need to think about how we call that out, where we're accepting, making an exception for areas within lawns and driveways and existing structures in existence at the time of the ordinance, rather than making an exception for a vernal pool within those areas.
I find it very hard to believe there's going to be a vernal pool
in
somebody's maintained lawn.
Right, but that's the way we have it worded right now, is that we're making an exception for any vernal pool within someone's lawn or driveway, but we're not making an exception for the 200-foot area within somebody's.
Oh.
See what I mean? Or outside of it, but...
Well, I think we're all in agreement, aren't we, that existing landscaping and so on can be maintained,
except
regardless of the distance from the vernal pool?
That's not how it says.
No.
Yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean,
no.
Well,
yeah.
For instance, the vernal pool that backs right up to the building down in the site, that whole building is in the 200-foot buffer of the vernal pool.
You can't. Right.
Yes, ma'am.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't defined in the definition section the no buffer zone for vernal pools? Because I was just wondering, the common thread is the exception issue, but it really is more, in my own mind, is more of a, the common thread is the pre-existing condition issue. So I was just wondering if that vernal pool buffer is defined, you could wrap into that definition, it does not include pre-existing.
Good point. Yeah.
Well, except that I think the idea is people have the ability to maintain what's there within the buffer, but not, it hasn't become not part of a buffer. In other words, they couldn't put a garage there. If there isn't a garage there now, if they've got a lawn there and flowers and whatnot, they can maintain it. But they can't build a structure there.
Yeah, I think it's on the table better as an exception rather than a redefinition of what a vernal pool buffer is.
Yeah, I think it really comes down to the concept of no disturb. But these maintaining the existing landscaping isn't going to be considered a disturbance. Something like that.
Yeah.
But I think conceptually we're all on the same page, aren't we, in terms of what we're saying about the vernal pool setback buffer, if you want to call it that.
I think so.
I mean, if there's something already there.
Well, the question also has come up, and that's why I passed around this map. You all have a map of the existing and potential vernal pools as they're currently mapped by the state for Newburyport. And we've had the comment that we should be only regulating vernal pools that are certified, of which we have like a handful. Let's see, we have like four. Eight or nine. Most of them are in areas that are not developed and won't be developed, but some of them are closer to neighborhoods. And then we have, another eight or nine potential vernal pools, which are already mapped out there. And those, some of those are, a good number of those actually are also close to neighborhoods or within neighborhoods. So even if we regulate just certified and potential vernal pools, that's significant. To add on to that, any non-mapped or non...
We're not going to regulate potential vernal pools. I don't see any... Because I know that several of those potential ones for the city, those the maps that the state made were strictly based on infrared assumptions.
I guess what I mean is not that we're regulating... They're not going to get regulated unless they are vernal pools, but let's say there's a project on, Everett Drive or Verbo Terrace or somewhere near one of those potential vernal pools, and someone says, and it's July, and someone says, oh, there's a vernal pool in my backyard, and see, it's even on the map as a potential vernal pool, and they can't build there, and there's 200 feet, and I don't want... this is what's going to happen, and we're going to say, okay, well, it doesn't look like a vernal pool now because there's no water in it, but it is mapped as a potential vernal pool. We're going to make whoever the applicant is wait until the following spring to go out there and prove to us that that's not a vernal pool. So, and that's, that doesn't include areas that aren't on this map.
Well, vernal pools can be, when they're dry, you can make a fairly good determination whether they're a vernal pool. There is some characteristics and some leftover detritus and possibly eggs and such that...
You could, but we even say in our regulations that it has to be done at the right time of year. The evidence has to be...
Right. Well, in the regs, we, or wherever, we can put something saying that they got to show us evidence that it's a vernal pool. The people at the Wheelwright House, they claim that that isolated wetland there was a vernal pool. And they didn't show us anything that it was. Maybe it was. But they didn't give us any kind of information. And as far as having it certified, its certification is, we can easily make a determination in 10 minutes whether it's a certifiable vernal pool.
At any season, Joe? At any season?
I don't have the ability to do it at any season. For a good portion of the time, we can. But what I'm saying is, those folks who are claiming that it's a vernal pool, you've got to show some sort of proof that it is.
Well, doesn't the ordinance also provide that the vernal pool does not have to be certified by the state?
Yeah, well, I think it does.
Yes, I believe it.
Sure, it does. And I believe we can do it. And I would certainly have no issue adding to the ordinance or to the regulations that if someone does present us that sort of information, that we forward it to DEP and go for an official certification to get it on the regular maps. But... I think we should be able to self-certify a vernal pool. It's not a big deal.
So, all right, let's just think about the scenario that could happen then. So that person comes in and says, there's this vernal pool back here. I don't think it's appropriate for you to permit the project. And we say, it's nice of you to say that. It doesn't, we don't have any evidence, though, that this is a vernal pool. Unless you can provide us evidence and then we can specify that in the regs, then we are going to permit the project as such without...
If those folks want to call in a professional to come in and gather the information needed...
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how we can hold up a permitting process just because somebody makes a statement at a hearing or on the telephone that they think it's a vernal pool.
I just think that that could easily happen based on the way we have the regs and the ordinance written now. So if we wanted, maybe we can put, I'm sure we can be more clear.
Well, we have language elsewhere that says, you know, the burden is on the proponent to produce the evidence. And in this case, in this case, the proponent is the abutter, probably, who wants to stop the project, right?
And they're free to hire somebody. Somebody could be in there in a week before the next meeting and go in and determine, come up with the information as to whether it's a real vernal pool.
Then I think that's great.
All you have to do is say this: the person asserting that it's a vernal pool has the burden of proof.
And I just think that that wording needs to get in the regs then. And it can go in the regs. I don't think it needs to go in the ordinance, but that the wording should get in there in one place or another. Okay.
But I think the distinction is correctly vernal pools, non-vernal pools, not certified and non-certified, because who knows?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right, so we'll just follow.
We can save that for the regs.
Yeah, they'll have to present to us the same information, the same proof that they would have to present to the state.
Do these questions that you've been raising, Julia, subsume everything that Tom has presented, or because there was
that was originally brought up by Steve at last week's city council meeting,
okay.
So that's how I started looking into it, and I think Tom probably has the same question about the. Tom was the one who mentioned the point about the vernal pool being within someone's yard or...
Yeah, but he had some other issues, too.
He had some other issues.
Which are some good points, I think.
Implementation-type points.
Right. So I guess my question at this point is a question of process. I mean, this is in a city council committee, right? And we've been talking about some changes in the ordinance and or the regulations. So where do we go with this? I know Katie, you suggested, can you give us a kind of a redlined version with changes? We can certainly do that, but I'm not sure. Some of this, I think, requires a little bit of thought about the language.
Yeah, I think it does require some thought about the language. So I'm thinking that what we could do is I could meet with Andy at his earliest convenience and try to hash some of this out with him, because he wasn't here today when I was making all these notes. So... and then send something around as soon as we can to you all for your approval, then get it in a version that makes it really clear for the city council committee to take a look at. Because you're right, it's not many changes, but it's a few, and I think there could be real improvements.
And some of it I think we can handle in the regulations
in
terms of what we mean by altering a wetland resource area.
And also, Andy, this is as much Andy's baby as it is ours, and I wish he was here tonight, because he could have answered a lot of things, because a lot of this was based on the Peabody ordinance, which he wrote. So.
Right.
So he may,
And then the other unfortunate complication is, too, is that the 17th, when we meet again, because I would otherwise suggest that, maybe before, and Julie made recommended changes, circulate it, and then discuss it at the next meeting on the 17th. But the CVS Story Avenue meeting is at 7. So, I don't know. I mean, he may be split for time as well. I mean, it'd be great if he could be here with you guys, not miss the opportunity again. That's scheduled for 7 o'clock. But,
and we're scheduled for 6:30.
Yeah,
we're gonna be upstairs.
So maybe what could happen is, I don't think it's realistic at this point for us to aim for our next city council meeting on April 9th. The one after that is on April 30th. I won't be here to speak to it, but if we at least shoot for having this be back on the agenda for your April 17th meeting, I think that would keep things on track so that you can discuss the written recommendations.
I think, given all the work that's gone into this, I think it's just important to make sure that everybody feels this is being done thoughtfully and nothing is being rushed and steamrolled in any kind of way.
Yeah, so far, have here tonight sounds like improvements, and certainly books are all worth thinking, if not writing. But yeah, it's good to have some time to think about it, because it's always a
Well, so why not?
I mean, I wouldn't even be the first to see it going on into May if it has to. If I, maybe the council, maybe it would feel different, and the council feels differently. But, you know, it's a thing we want to try to get it right.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't I try to get you guys something that we can discuss, you can review prior to the 17th, meeting on the 17th, and then we can discuss it at that meeting on the 17th.
Yeah.
But one other thing I wanted to bring up, too, is that Andy had an issue with the FEMA reading.
Yes. Okay, so the FEMA zones, as everyone knows, have changed. Not only have they changed in location and elevations, but they've changed in name and definitions. So, and we reference the old ones in the ordinance.
Okay.
So that's just a process of going through and changing them, except that because they've changed in these weird ways, we need to decide how we want them to be applied, actually. Because the old ordinance for Plum Island, we call out the V-zone and the AO zone as being have the regulated areas. Well, now we've got the V-zone, the AO zone, and the AE zone, and they cover, the three of them cover much more of the island than the other two did. But essentially, the A and the AO and the AE are the same. The 100-year flood, but they're defined slightly differently. So we're at like a crossroads with this, where I think the commission needs to decide how to apply them to this new ordinance.
So it's more than just labeling.
So it's a little more than just labeling.
Yeah, one of them has a difference with base elevations.
Yep.
Base flood elevations, and one I don't think has them.
One has the elevations defined. The AE zone defines the elevations. The AO zone doesn't. But at the same time, they're both defined as the 100-year flood. So, or the flood with a 1% chance of occurring in any given year. So.
Well, it used to be that the AO zone was the overwash zone.
Right, and it still is. There's a difference in the definition of how the floodwaters travel to.
Right.
So,
that was why those two were the high hazard zones.
Right.
So it's kind of a question whether AE falls into that or is it just elevation?
Well, I guess they know what the base flood elevation is for the AE zone, or they think they do.
Yeah.
And
base flood elevations derived. So the AE is base flood elevations derived from detailed analyses are shown at selected intervals within these zones. AO is similarly, areas with a 1% or greater chance of shallow flooding each year, usually in the form of sheet flow, with average depth ranging 1 to 3 feet. Average flood depths derived from detailed analyses are shown within these zones. So it's just a different... data set.
It's being more of the, the velocity of the water coming in to the AO zone, depending on the height hazard.
So the AO is in a form of sheet flow, whereas the AE doesn't say that. It's just annual 1% annual chance of flooding.
Yeah, it's just flow of water.
So you could, essentially, since the AE zone is what has been added, I mean, the AO zone has changed a little bit.
Yeah.
You could decide to not add in the AE zone, or to add in the AE zone.
And by adding in, you mean adding in is the high hazard?
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Well, it would really, I mean, the way people are looking at it now is they're looking at the new maps of Plum Island saying everything is covered, everything is high hazard area, because it's AE, A, O, and V.
So refresh me on what the implications are of the performance standards.
The implications are that now there's... plenty of areas of Plum Island, especially along Northern Boulevard, that are outside of these high hazard zones, and they can do construction without as much regulation.
Right.
And if we adopt the AE, if we bring the AE into this, whereas now it's just V and AO, then we're adding in a much greater area of Plum Island to that higher.
Yeah, because essentially you're not, you're not allowed any increase in size.
Right.
You can't
add on.
Maintaining your house, that's it.
Right. You can't, right, you can only just maintain it.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, it's really restrictive. It's almost like trying to phase out those homes.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So it's a big decision of whether or not to add this new area.
Who was recommending that AD be part of the high capacity?
Well, I think in some ways we just assumed that it would be because it's creating an area that's defined as a 100-year flood zone where it wasn't before. It's a sort of like an add-on to the zone A, which is a 100-year flood zone.
That was the A zone, which is a 100-year flood zone.
Yeah. So now there's A, AO, and AE instead of just...
How's AE different than
AE? AE just doesn't have... AE just says it's areas with 1% annual chance of flooding. In most instances, base flood elevations derived from detailed analysis are shown at selected intervals. AO is the river or stream flood hazard areas and areas with 1% greater chance of shallow flooding each year, usually in the form of sheet flow, with average depth ranging from 1 to 3 feet.
How much is the AO zone expanded?
I'm trying to bring it up.
Yeah.
You
can go to the cities.
Julie, what was the difference between the A zone, the old A zone,
the old A zone. I don't have the definition for the old A zone.
You say that in the new one, we have A,
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 and
A,
and AO. And there's,
So what's the difference between A?
So A is areas with 1% annual chance of flooding. And because detailed analyses are not performed for such areas, no depths or base flood elevations are shown within these zones. There's also like an AH.
Yeah.
There's an AR.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, they just went nuts with all these new zones, but
I don't know. At the end of the day, I think we ought to be striving to not be dramatically changing the performance standards with respect to what's up out here. However we define that in terms of these zones, or if we even.
You know what I can try to do also for our next meeting is get a better, and we're working on this with the GIS right now, is to get a better sort of definition of the areas where it's changed, what it's changed from, what it's changed to.
Yeah.
Out there.
Yeah, it sounds to me like this new AD zone is, from our point of view, the same as the old A zone. Basically, they're, the restriction is that they have to all of it.
Okay.
And maybe that's the fix that we end up with.
Yeah, but essentially that's a,
it's a labeling fix.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we just go, change that old or new ordinance to say AD is treated this way.
But there are probably going to be some maddening differences.
I once spun up a list of all of the zones, and they were unbelievable. I think they got infected in different times by different people.
Yeah, it seems like that.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be drastically tightening up the standards so that people can't do what they could do yesterday.
Yeah. Right. Okay, we need to figure this one out soon.
Only reason for it.
Well, that's the problem.
We actually need to figure this out regardless of...
Stuff.
I actually had this on the agenda for tonight as a discussion. I think it's a lengthier discussion than we might want to have tonight and have more data here to do that because it's something that we need to work out regardless of our ordinance because it's changed for the existing ordinance too as of July 3rd, so... We have to make those determinations. And if somebody, so all these people who want to do projects out on Plum Island are getting all worried about this new zone that they might be in, and if they get an application in now, let's say they get their application in June, and the maps don't go into effect until July, Will we hold them to the old zones or make them...
Hasn't the effectiveness of these things been postponed at least once, these maps?
Yeah, but I think they have to be adopted by July 3rd.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how they, the actual height hazard ones change.
Yeah, okay.
And I think it's also, you know, currently we're not using supposedly the 1985 map. We're using the Campresser maps.
Right.
So I don't know if there's much difference between that and these new ones.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll put that on the agenda.
You know, you know, again, if somebody came in and filed something and we credited it before July, and then the zones changed in July, it'd be just like
everything else.
And, you know.
We had a question, though, that was, what if I come in June and I get my application in June, but you guys don't permit it until July?
Oh, then we could use the new ones.
Okay.
Because then that's information in front of us.
Okay. Okay.
I can do it now.
What, the old one?
This is the new stuff.
That's the new.
Yeah, this is.
See? I mean, it's like
yeah, this is the AO up there. AE is a much larger area, but it seems like the AO is closer to what it was before.
Okay. Yeah, the graphic maps they had all last year, I didn't see much difference.
Okay. And the AO?
Yeah.
So we'll just leave the AE alone, maybe. Potentially.
Yeah.
Which seems strange because,
You
know, that's, it has the same potential to be flooded like the rest of it. Like the AO.
But not in a velocity situation.
Yeah, it's really the velocity part of it from what Coastal Zone said. Because in the other parts, you know, if you're high enough up, you're not getting the force of waves, you're just getting water. You know?
Right, but how does it go from being dangerous in the VE zone not being dangerous in the AE zone and then dangerous in the AO zone? Because the AE is a buffer between
the
velocity and the AO.
It's strange as to how they made it out.
That doesn't
make sense.
Well, the AO used to be where if you had a really huge storm, the water could come up over that primary dune and down.
It must just be lower. It must just be an more extreme change in elevation.
I'll call
up
right now for our next meeting.
Yeah, I can print that out.
Yeah.
I've already done this. I've probably already done this. But.
Not to such a great extent. And while our ordinance, you know, we don't have an ordinance that covers that at this point. So. Yeah, he's already handled his piece.
Yes.
He's gotten his map change.
It's amazing how that works.
Yeah.
He was smart to do it.
That's
all that I have.
There's an item on here, Whittier Bridge.
The salt marsh. Okay. I had a great conversation today with John. What's his last name? I should have brought it with me.
Before we go into this, are you all set?
I am. Thank you. And, you know, I don't think that will be a rushed process at this point. I think that. We're kind of like in a holding pattern with the tree ordinance, the wetlands, CBS, we don't want to be arbitrary, like set some date to do it. We just want to make sure that everyone's on the same page and that we have enough of a forum to make sure that our members have some updates on it too. So I think that we'll just stay in touch and be a good communication on these.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so I spoke with the scientist from Ecotech, who is the guy who has been doing the monitoring program out at for the oil spill under the bridges. So there's one more monitoring that they're going to do in September of 2012. And he said, you know, he thinks that those salt marshes out there are in a precarious position with regard to the flow of the river, and they're kind of all hanging on and they change a bit. But that, you know, in terms of the oil spill, they're in good shape. They've rebounded. It was really only the stems that were impacted from the oil floating on the surface, and that the sediments were not as heavily impacted as they originally thought, and that it was the die-off was basically due to just the contact of the product with the stems of the plants, and that they're doing well now, and he expects that they would continue to. I asked him if he could, you know, work for us to continue on with the monitoring plan, and I explained to him the project with DOT and what our concerns were about shading. And he said that he didn't think they could do that because it would potentially be a conflict of interest to work for a public entity and a private entity at the same time on the same site. You know, he didn't want to get involved with that, but he did have a lot of good advice about it.
Well, in September, isn't that his last monitoring?
September is his last monitoring, but he seemed to think, I mean, maybe their contract goes on with whoever it is. And he said it was very convoluted in terms of who they were working for and who was working for who, and it went around and around. But he said that he'd actually like to, but that he just didn't think it was appropriate for them to get involved. He said that he thinks it's a good idea that we do the monitoring out there. He didn't think it was a good idea for us to contact UNH because he said if we were ever to pursue any kind of enforcement of a violation with dieback of the salt marshes, that we're better off having had a professional wetland scientist and professional firm do that kind of work. So he suggested Mary Rimmer. I think we could find anyone else local who would probably do it. He thinks that we should probably do a 5-year monitoring program, and that what we would need to do would be, also he said we should check and make sure that they haven't, if they've delineated those salt marsh areas, right? So we have current delineation. So if we were to go out and delineate it again in 5 years, we'd see whether or not it shrunk. That's number one. So we need to have delineations done as part of the monitoring. We also need, he said, 2 to 3 plots within each area and do a delineation and a stem density within each plot. So,
I'm not sure the amount of salt marsh and the potential shade here.
To do two to three plots. He seemed to think that there would be. He also sort of agreed that it was not the wisest decision for them to propose the wetland restoration area underneath the bridges in that area where the outfall came out. He said it's going to be difficult for it to establish there. But it was a good conversation. So I think we could put something together with somebody else. And I'll get in touch with Mary Rimmer if you all want to.
I think we have to establish what's there as a baseline.
Yeah. And yeah.
We'll never be able to get them to agree that there was a change.
Right.
They didn't need to establish
right.
the baseline.
Right.
I think it's bigger than just the potential shading area, too, because, you know, they say, oh, well, you know, our construction protocols are going to be such that they won't damage the existing salt marsh.
Right.
Well,
right.
Sure.
So this guy was really great. He sort of was very supportive of what we're trying to do. He said he hates to see DOT ram these projects down local commissions' throats, and he understood, you know, when I explained to him how it all happened, he understood completely, and he said that he would try and get out there if he could prior to their start of work to do his last monitoring. So if they start work in September, and I don't remember exactly.
I don't think they were going to start next year.
I don't think they're starting until next year either.
Yeah, I think they're going to start in September, but it's
not.
Back from the river.
Back from the river, exactly. So he would make sure to get out there and do his final monitoring of those areas prior to the bridge start of work.
And we would need to get Mary or somebody out there
right.
prior to
them doing that. So we have a good baseline.
Okay.
So we don't think they'll be down working on the bank before next summer?
Probably. Sir, you're
this would be a current
September.
No, next 2013.
Well, I think they
would be in the spring.
I think they would be then.
Because they need to relocate the elk.
I'm just wondering about the timing, if we're going to explore hiring somebody to do this monitoring, you know, when we would want the first.
I think we want the first one this summer.
Yeah, that was sort of my thought.
I think we need to
have summer,
we need
early
to have,
fall or
we
something.
We need to have it this summer, yeah.
If you do it in August, that's about the end of the time growing season, so
right.
Hopefully things will be a good day.
Right.
And that will definitely be before the DOT people screw things up.
Yeah. Right. He also said that it would be very apparent. And he said that these peat areas are sort of hanging on, and that they sometimes collapse, pieces, parts of them collapse off just from river scours or undercuts.
That's natural.
That's natural. And he said it's absolutely, there's no question that we'd be able to identify that kind of a change as opposed to a kind of a change from shading. So,
Interesting.
Yeah.
If we're done with that, I don't know. Discovered a couple of things. Just boat ramp that we approved the
Chapa?
Yeah, RDA. Yeah. There's a big hole they talked about repairing. But just upslope from that, there are some small holes. And
I think he identified them, Steve.
Yeah.
Did he? That they were able to fix those on
there's
yeah.
also some broken
yeah.
areas on the sides of the.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I think they're fixing all of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're behind that.
Yep. Okay.
Then I walked out behind the sewer plant along the river, and somebody has cut some shrubbery there, you know, right down.
On that little path on the
yeah.
trail? I think they do that every year. Do they?
Yeah.
Along the riverside of the path?
Yeah. I mean, they trimmed some branches. I don't know why anybody would do it, but it's clearly, you know, the buffer zone, and I don't think they're allowed to do it.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know how they
right.
can stop anybody from coughing in the act.
Right.
And the other was behind the new building, the sewer plant, there's some erosion. There's a gully, and it's going right into a drain. Probably needs some hay bales around it.
Okay, where is this one now?
It's, you know, the new building.
Yep.
Well, there's the new cement walkway.
Yep.
There's the new building.
Yep.
Behind that.
Behind the new building, okay.
Behind the new building, flowing towards the river.
Okay.
There's some erosion that has taken place, and the sediment is going right into this pond.
Okay, where is the water coming from? The driveway?
No, it's from
from the plant.
The new lawn.
Okay.
Okay,
so it's runoff from the building
it's
site.
From the building or
okay.
From somewhere.
Okay. Okay.
It's sort of like the landfill, not quite as bad.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll check that out. Thank you. Anything
That's
else?
It.
Any others?
No. It was a short walk.
Okay. Sounds like a nice walk then.
Yeah,
it was a good walk.
Yeah.
Is the grass growing down there yet?
No. Which is, I think, part of the problem.
Right. Like, I received it. Too late, I guess.
Yeah. It doesn't look like anything's growing.
Mm.
But it hasn't been watered either. Mm. So obviously there's some water.
Which is a question I forgot to ask earlier when Nyland was here. I mean, they're going to be hydro seeding again up there, or they are, on the landfill, on the mound. And how are they going to, if it stays as dry as it is, don't you need a certain amount of moisture to make that stuff grow?
Especially on slopes like that.
Well, they're not going to put turf down.
No.
Pray
yeah,
for
I
rain.
I just want you to get
You're
your
pray
green
for
roof.
Rain.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how that all works out. I'm not sure how they're going to get any equipment down there. Where they need to,
I don't
think. You know, there's a rock drop off. 5 or 6 feet. They built on city land, of course. The mayor was going to be involved in all their closure and what they were going to do out there. There's a lot of damage on city land that it's outside our jurisdiction, but they need to be held accountable for it.
Right. I'll mention it to her. Okay.
I could certainly have 2 cents worth on that.
I do have a map. I had done it before. I think I had sent it out before with the new FEMA AO and VE zones and the affected vacant lots. Well, some of them are not vacant anymore. I know one of them that we did a permit on this past year, I think, which were in a VE zone. But I don't know, Paul, your house might be in the VE zone now.
Gotta get that addition done now.
But I'll send it out as soon as I get to a place where I have internet access, which I seem to have lost here. So, do we have anything else?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it.
Aye.